They arrive when no one is looking, or cares enough to be looking, and then lacking any meaningful competition, they take control and supplant the natives. And that leads us to ask, should invasive species be eliminated, or should they be allowed to grow?
Welcome to the award-winning Food Chain Radio Show with your host, Michael Olson. And now, get ready for 1 hour of What's Eating What Radio.
Well, thank you, Will Strickland, and hello out there. You are tuned into the 1102nd edition of the Food Chain right here on the GCN Radio Network. Or, hey, perhaps you're among our friends way down there in Sydney who are tuned in as we stream along on the Food Chain page at metrofarm.com. Well, whoever you are and wherever you are, welcome aboard. I am Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What Radio with engineer Jason Struby on the boards. Hello, Jason.
It's a real pleasure.
So, do you think all of those invasive species should be eliminated, or should we just ignore them and let them grow?
Let's terminate them.
Terminate them. All right. Also with us, we have a guest in the studio, Andrea. Andrea, what do you think about the notion of eliminating all of those invasive species, or should we just let them grow?
I think there's got to be a balance found somewhere in between.
That's a good political answer. You probably run for political office on that one.
Maybe one day.
Well, folks, I recently returned from a trip that included stops in Manila, Sydney, and Port Vila. And that's the nature of our world today, is it not? Everyone goes everywhere all the time. But when we do go somewhere, we often take species with of life alien to those places we're going to go. And when we take them there, there's nothing there for them to compete with them. Nothing there to look at them as if they were breakfast. Now, that's a decided advantage over the native species because those native species have all kinds of critters that look on them as breakfast. So the invasive species are able to outcompete the natives and take over, and that's where we're at. Take, for example, the island nation of New Zealand, which was way back when a predator-free paradise for birds. Then we showed up, bringing with us rats, possums, and stoats, each of which loved to eat birds, and each of which had nothing to eat them. So much for that paradise for birds. What to do? New Zealand has now set itself an environmental goal so ambitious it's been compared to putting a man on the moon. That goal? Rid the nation of every last rat, possum, and stoat. That goal leads us to ask, should invasive species be eliminated or allowed to grow? Well, here to help us consider the question, we have Heath Packard, who's a communications director for Island Conservancy. Heath, welcome to the Food Chain.
Thank you, Michael. It's a pleasure to be here.
Now, I got to admit, I love the notion of your job. I mean, you spend so much time traveling from island paradise to island paradise. Tough work. How did you manage to run into that? And who is this Island Conservancy?
Well, it does sound romantic, but I can assure you that when we get on the islands and have to do the hard work of trying to rid the islands of invasive species, it's actually quite arduous and less romantic than it sounds at the outset. I do work for Island Conservation. I'm the communications director, and I've been there for almost 5 years, and I got very lucky to be selected to be their first communications director.
Now, with that's your job is to tell the story of
that's
Island
right.
Conservancy. What is the story?
Well, it's a story of hope, really. We live in an age where many of the environmental challenges that we face are bleak and sometimes overwhelming. And in this case, we have many great success stories of hope and restoration of islands where we've intervened, removed invasive species that were predating on natives and helped to restore the island ecosystem and protect native endemic species, threatened species that were suffering by the introduction of those species.
Well, we always like to ask, who pays the way for such a noble enterprise?
That's a great question. We receive funding sometimes from governments, sometimes from small donors and major philanthropic foundations. So it's a mix of government grants and philanthropic giving that helps us get our job done.
So if you're an island nation and you've got trouble,
Give us a call.
Give us a call.
That's okay. Right.
So we'll figure out how to take care of the problem. Well, and, you know, there's a lot of problems going on in the world because people travel so much now. I mean, everybody's going everywhere. And even way back when, they went everywhere on their wooden ships. And that's really where a lot of the problems started, was it not?
That's right. That's right. Many of the world's islands have had invasive species introduced to them, some of them hundreds and hundreds of years ago. In one case, you can think about invasive goats, which were introduced by whalers and pirates and buccaneers and fishers hundreds of years ago. They would drop goats off on the island, come back in a couple of years on their way back, and find fresh meat. Quite utilitarian. In many other cases, invasive rats, mice, have been introduced quite accidentally by those same ships.
Mm-hmm. So it's kind of two ways that they get introduced, by design and by accident. Goats, my God, goats can get by on anything.
They eat everything, and we have pictures of islands that have been completely denuded of their vegetation. We have pictures of goats, multiple goats, standing in the canopy of a tree, eating the leaves off the tree. They're very agile.
You know, I heard stories about how North Africa was once a great agricultural paradise, the breadbasket of the Roman Empire. And then they introduced goats, and it became a desert.
Really?
And you could see how that would happen, because they do eat everything. They just eat it right down to the nubbins. What is the geographical territory of island conservation then?
So island conservation is the only global biodiversity conservation nonprofit organization whose sole mission is dedicated to prevent extinctions by removing invasive species from islands. And we work globally. Currently, we're working in the Caribbean. We're working in South America, in the Galapagos, in Ecuador, in Chile. We're working in French Polynesia, Australia, New Zealand, Hawaii, many other places around the world.
So are you working, I assume you have some kind of relationship with the New Zealand government with respect to their great crusade. Is there some way of describing how big a crusade this would be?
Yeah, yes, absolutely. So New Zealand Department of Conservation and Island Conservation partnered very recently on a project in called Antipodes Island, which is a very ambitious project to remove mice from the island.
Removing mice.
Yes,
mice.
Yes. Million-dollar mouse campaign is what it was called.
Wow.
And it was quite ambitious and very exciting. And it's a fascinating island because it's a, you know, it's almost a sub-Antarctic island, and there's a parrot that lives there, which is quite beautiful, very charismatic. So we're very excited about that project. It'll be another year before we can go back and do the confirmation to see if we've been successful there or not. But it's been quite
beautiful. Okay, so you have an island down there by Antarctica, and you have a lot of mouse traps, right? how do you...
That's what I was going to ask. How do you go about actually, because there's so many and they're so little and they're quite prolific. So, yeah, I mean, how do you get rid of an island full of mice?
Yeah, very tricky. So in this case, and as is the case in most rodent eradications, we use a rodenticide to eliminate the mice or the rats. And on large islands, those are typically broadcast using helicopters.
Oh.
And the helicopters suspend a hopper that transmits the bait, so that there's enough bait in every mouse territory so that every mouse is succumbs to the...
And I guess my concern would be, now these mice are poisoned, essentially, right? And then they die. Is there a reason? Yeah, is there a reason for... just like you have with lead, for example. If you use a bullet and it has lead in it, and you kill an animal with that and the animal gets eaten by another animal, then you have the lead in the cycle. What happens with the poisons in this case?
That's why this work is so challenging. We have to spend years and years and years to have the deepest possible understanding of the island ecosystem,
of the food web,
and the food chain, and implement strategies to make sure that only the target species succumb to the conservation toxicant, and that we figure out ways to avoid or mitigate other impacts. So in some cases, we've actually collected some of the native species and held them in protective captivity until the island was made safe again for their survival.
Wow.
So lots of islands. And, you know, just coming back from a flight from Sydney to Manila, and the airplane was like flying at 41,000 feet, which is higher than typical, you know. And so I was looking down at the islands of the Timor Sea and up through Indonesia there. Oh, my goodness. They're total jungles. And they've got to be filled with all kinds of critters. Wow. Okay, folks.
Wow.
Away we go. We're going to travel the world looking into islands, looking at those invasive species that have taken over those islands. We're going to figure out how to get rid of them. Is it possible? And should we? Some say we shouldn't. We'll talk about that when we get back. And if you have a favorite invasive species you'd like to ask about, 831-479-1080. Do stay tuned.
You can dream it, build it, own it, Metro farm it. You can sow it, feed it, grow it, Metro farm it. Ah, you can harvest it and dry it. You can sell it, Metro farm it.
Learn how to dream it, build it, sow it, seed it, grow it, harvest it, sell it, Metro farm it. Yes, you can do it. Dream it, build it, earn it, own it, Metro farm it.
Oh, learn it, do it, earn it, Metro farm it. Dream it, build it, own it. It's easy, you can do it, Metro farm it.
It's all in Metro Farm, the guide to growing for the city. Get your copy today at metrofarm.com.
It's easy, you can do it, Metro Farm it. And now, back to What's Eating What on the Food Chain with Michael Olson.
Well, what's eating us today is the invasive species that are essentially taking over much of the world and having their way with it. You know what happens when you take a species that was bred for one place and you put it into another is that nobody knows what it is. And people and the other critters look at it and say, well, that doesn't look like breakfast to me. I don't understand, you know, what that thing is. And because there's no competition like that, the invasive species can have its way with the environment. And they do. And so we're talking a little bit about the different places in the world where there are problems. And a big one is in the island of New Zealand, island nation of New Zealand, that many, many, many years ago was a paradise for birds. And actually is still known as being a paradise for birds. But with the advent of people and their ships and their critters, not so much anymore. Rats and possums and stoats are really a big threat to the island nation. Now, I was thinking about Guam and the snakes. So it seems like almost every place in the world there's trouble. But we're going to focus a little bit on New Zealand because the whole nation has adopted a strategy to rid itself of these invasive species and then turn itself back into a paradise for birds. Wouldn't it be fun to visit a paradise for birds like that, a whole nation? So Heath Packard, Island Conservation, you folks are working over there in on New Zealand. How do you even begin?
Well, it's a great question. New Zealand is actually the place where many of these conservation intervention methods were pioneered. And many of the tactics that we use on islands around the world were first started in New Zealand. And we're always adapting and innovating and getting better at doing that kind of work. So they, again, have established themselves as leaders in this field by setting this ambitious goal, the 2050 predator-free New Zealand. That's a goal to rid the main islands of New Zealand from rats, possums, and stoats by 2050. It's very ambitious, and it's a long time frame because it's a project like none other before. No island that large has ever been rid of invasive predators.
Wow. You know, during the break, Andrea was saying, it seems like a
Sisyphus job.
Work,
yes. Yeah, Sisyphus job.
Because you roll it up the hill and it rolls right back down on you. Isn't there an element of that? You know, you I guess that's why they're thinking really long term, that you fight it down here and it pops up over there. And
the nice thing about islands is you have a geographically contained system where you can actually effectuate an eradication, and then you can maintain that. You need to have biosecurity measures in place, and that's mm-hmm. the term that we use for making sure that there are preventions and quick interventions if there were to be a new introduction. So, yes, there's always a risk of incipient populations, new introductions, etc., but we don't do a project unless there's local capacity and expertise and plans in place to try to maintain the island to be predator-free by watching boats, watching foot traffic, watching folks coming and going from the islands.
That was my next question, is how do you, what is biosecurity? What does it look like when you're trying to keep an island safe?
Yeah, it's an evolving field. Mm-hmm. In the Galapagos, for example, if I can jump over to Ecuador real quick, there's a whole agency dedicated to biosecurity. Mm-hmm. And I've had the good fortune of being on the islands. And they check your backpacks, and they check your boots, and they check your shoes to make sure there are no seeds left on your shoes as you're coming and going from the
different
islands.
And they check your shoes for seeds.
That's right.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes, and I was recently on a remote island in Puerto Rico, and we had a whole protocol that we had to go through all of our clothes and look for seeds, hitchhikers they call them, mm-hmm. check your boots, all those kinds of things. And in the worst case, sometimes you have to freeze your clothes to make sure that anything that might be in there is DOA when you get to the
fascinating
island.
We have it in California with the flies. You're not supposed to bring certain fruits in, or you go through the border.
That's right. When you're driving in and out of California, you go through USDA or California Agricultural Inspection. Same thing, protecting the biosecurity for your agricultural.
Mm-hmm. I think one of the starkest example of that is flying in and out of Vanuatu to Fiji, either back and forth. I'm not sure which direction. But one of those directions, they fumigate the plane while you're in it.
Wow.
Which is yuck. But, but you know, to get rid of the mosquitoes and whatever might be carrying along. So you're looking at New Zealand, but there are people in New Zealand who are saying, no, this is silly. This is a waste of time because it's such a Herculean process. It's going to take so much resources to do this. Why don't we just move on to other projects that can have a much greater effect on the country? How would you respond to a criticism like that?
Well, it's an interesting point, but I think in the context of the fact that most recorded extinctions have occurred on islands, and islands support a disproportionately large percentage of our world's threatened and endangered species, and the fact that islands are only 5% of the world's land area, you actually have a very small investment that has an incredible return on that conservation investment. So this is a place where we can actually have real impact. We can prevent extinctions. We can save native species and native ecosystems and put them back to their natural state in a way that has lasting impact and lasting effect. And many other conservation efforts are less questionable, more questionable in terms mm-hmm. of their impact.
So what you're saying is we who live on the mainland are toast.
Yeah, that's what I was just thinking. What about California? Because we have a lot of invasive species here in California.
Oh, we have a lot of them. You know, there's, it seems to be two ways that their invasive species are introduced, accidentally, of course, but intentionally. And I did a show quite a while ago called Unintended Consequences, and it was about some of the unintended consequences of good intentions. And one of the good intentions was the introduction of starlings to America. Have you ever heard the story?
No.
So there was a fellow who was a mathematician, turn of the last century, 1800, who was a fan of Shakespeare. Mm-hmm. Oh, he was an astronomer. That's what he was. And he was a fan of Shakespeare. And he got to thinking, wouldn't it be wonderful if you were to be able to walk in Central Park in New York City and to see every one of the birds in Shakespeare's plays and thus be reminded of the play? So the next time he was in England, he picked up a couple cages filled with starlings mm-hmm. and brought them back to Central Park and turned them loose. And now they're completely running amok in America. So it was that good intention that just went ran amok. And I think there are other lots of good examples of that, like eucalyptus trees here. And one of them on the island of Vanuatu in World War II, the U.S. government decided what we need to do is plant some good camouflage. So they planted morning glories vines that would cover up their facilities. And today on Vanuatu is covered up by morning glory vines. What do you do for something like that? Do you folks at Island Conservation address plant species like that?
That's a terrific question. We do sometimes work on plants. Our focus these days is invasive mammalian predators because they cause the greatest damage and greatest harm, and we can successfully remove them. That's been done more than 1,000 times around the world, and
so it's something you can do. And if you're going to focus your efforts on something,
that's right.
May as well be something you can do.
Yeah, it's the highest return on investment, and that's what our donors like to see is that, you know, virtual overnight restoration effort. But we do some work on plants. And sometimes we have to, as we do the studies and we understand the food chain, if you will, we learn that if you get rid of goats, you're going to have a bloom of invasive plants that have been kept under control because the goats have been eating them.
Mm-hmm.
And so in those cases, we'll make sure that we don't do the operation to remove mammals until there are plans in place and ready to go to also contain and control and try to mitigate the impacts that will happen when you get that bloom of invasive rodents.
Okay, folks, this is the Food Chain Radio Program. Michael Olson, Heath Packard, talking about invasive species. He's with Island Conservation, a organization that goes around the world to the world's islands, gets rid of the bad critters, keeps the good ones, hopefully. 831-479-1080, right back.
Let's go back for more of What's Eating What on the Food Chain with Michael Olson.
Well, what's eating what is invasive species, and they're eating everything they're not supposed to. Well, what exactly is an invasive species, Heath Packard?
Thanks, Michael. Invasive species are non-native introduced animals or plants that have been introduced to a natural system.
Or insects,
that's right, yes. That are, by definition, doing harm to the native species.
It's the harm that makes them invasive species.
That's right. Yeah, there's plenty of introduced species that are not doing harm and therefore are not considered invasive.
What are some of the worst examples of invasive species that you can see?
Well, on islands, invasive rats are certainly the most deleterious. They're most prolific. They've been introduced to 90% of the world's island groups or island archipelagos.
Wow, so they're everywhere.
And there's an estimate on Wikipedia, for example, that there's more than 300 island groups. Other estimates are that there's 400,000 islands around the world.
And working with rats, tell what you do to get rid of rats. Take us to an island, Heath.
Yeah, I will.
A really exotic one. not just like Catalina.
Yeah, and I'm taking it doesn't involve a flute or something along those lines to get rid of the rats.
No Pied Pipers. If that worked, we'd try it.
Yeah, I bet you would. It's probably preferable.
So one of my favorite stories to tell is about Pinzon Island, which is an island in the Galapagos. And the Galapagos, of course, was made famous by Darwin on his journey on the Beagle and his coming up with the theory of evolution. Pinzon giant tortoise is one of the most charismatic and incredible species that
Wait a minute. How can a giant turtle be charismatic?
Oh, come on, really?
It's a tortoise, not a turtle.
Yeah.
A tortoise, okay.
And these things are the size
you can't
of your
hold,
coffee
You
table.
Can't hold your arms out in
That's
radio.
Right.
That's
you
right.
couldn't hug them if you wanted
it's
to.
It's huge.
They're giant. They're giant. They weigh thousands of pounds.
Really?
They can live to 150 years.
Wow.
They're incredible, incredible animals. But the Pinzon giant tortoise was imperiled because of introduced invasive species, goats, but rats in particular. And what happened was the rats would eat the tortoise eggs or the hatchlings as they came out of the nest.
Mm-hmm.
And the rats were introduced hundreds of years ago. And the International Union for the Conservation of Nature, the folks that declare what species are endangered or extinct, They've listed this species as extinct in the wild because it could not breed in the wild. It could not regenerate itself.
Because of the competition from the invasives.
That's right, yeah. So this species was literally on the brink of extinction. About 30 or 40 years ago, a bunch of forward-thinking conservationists said, we're going to lose this Pinzon giant tortoise if we don't do something. So they collected the tortoise. They collected the eggs. They brought them into containment and incubated them and grew the hatchlings to the point where they were too big for the rats to attack and eat, then re-released them into the wild, buying time, waiting for a day when maybe we can make the island safe and they can they can reproduce naturally in their natural environment. Well, we partnered in 2012 with the Galapagos National Park to eliminate rats, which was successful. And now we're seeing pictures of these giant tortoise hatchlings, which are actually quite small. They fit in your hand and very cute. They are climbing out of the nests, and they are reproducing in the wild for the first time in over 100 years.
Wow.
So, so how do you get rid of the rats? I mean, so I'm a rat fighter myself. I take great pride in killing rats.
Not a lot of love lost for rats for those folks. Yeah, this was another one of those operations where we used a rodenticide, the tried and true method that we have today, and applied it
so
to the island.
So you really, but before you did that, you really had to get to know the island. And
that's right. For
so what do you do? So you send ecologists and biologists down, and you know, you study the history and you read The Voyage of the Beagle, all the stuff
like
that.
That's right, that's right. We actually have a team in the Galapagos. One of our one of the reasons we're successful is our business model of having local experts on site who work in the region and understand the flora and fauna, but also study it. They collect all the available information. They go do original studies to understand the ecosystem so that we can make sure we can do these things safely and effectively.
And now, with respect to the Galapagos, it's a tremendous tourist attraction around the world. I mean, people, it's destination for, you know, people all over the world because of the history and whatnot. So it's a valuable service, not only for the biology and the environment, but for the economy of the Ecuador, right?
That's right. In fact, it's not only a benefit to the economy, the nature tourism economy, but it's also a benefit to the local agriculture. There's actually quite a few people that live in the Galapagos, and the next island we hope to do a project on has a small community of folks that do a lot of farming, and the rats are just eating all of their plants as they grow them, their crops, and it's a real problem. They want the species, the invasive species, gone so that they can get more tourists to the island, but also so they can grow more food, which they sell to the other islands. So economics is a big part of this work. Invasive species are estimated to impact 5% of the world's global gross product, GDP.
Wow.
So not only
are
that's a lot of money.
Impact.
Yeah.
Yes, billions of dollars a year.
Not only are they a pain, but they're a big pain.
That's right.
Yeah.
Their financial pain as well as an environmental pain.
So in thinking about how you went about attacking the rats of the Galapagos, you had to really develop a plan on how to attack the island itself. I mean, you had to have a battle plan. You know, it had to be like Patton, right? We're going to have this encircling movement and we're going to how'd you do it?
Yeah, so every project we do is in partnership with the local community and their local governments and their federal governments. And so the first thing is to establish a good working relationship with those partners, figure out what experts you have, figure out where you have gaps, and bring in the right folks so that you can understand deeply how the island works and what the implications are going to be when you do the operation.
So it would seem like you would really have to have buy-in from the local community.
That's right.
And in just thinking about the islands, I know that would be an interesting process.
Yes, that can sometimes take more time than anything else.
Yeah,
the actual operation can happen in a matter of months, but it may take years to get the permits in place and get the community, sufficient number of the community to support the project.
What's some of the resistance that you might run into that I wouldn't think of, for example, from the community that what you're trying to do, obviously, with this island is
well,
a good
I suspect a lot of the local villages think you're trying to poison them.
There's always concerns about using a toxicant, a rodenticide, and it takes a fair amount of work to educate the community about how this product is relatively safe. It's very effective at what it does, but it can, it's not water soluble, so it doesn't affect water systems. It breaks down in the environment very quickly.
Okay.
The bait product is 99.999% cereal and grains and those kinds of things, and a very small percentage of the toxicant. So getting that education across is very important, and making sure that folks feel comfortable with it before you go ahead and do it is a critical step. And we're looking for alternatives. We're looking for new tools that might make it easier for us to rise to the challenge, the scope, and scale of the problem without having to use those kinds of toxins.
And that's one of the things they talk about in New Zealand with this incredibly huge, giant project, is we're going to have some scientific breakthroughs to make it happen. So when we get back from this break, let's go to the scientific breakthroughs we're looking at and scratch our head over whether we think about them. This is The Food Chain. Michael Olson, right back. 831-479-1080.
And now, more of What's Eating What on The Food Chain with Michael Olson.
Yes, indeed, it is the invasive species that are eating what today? And they're eating just about everything they can in every place in the world they can. One place where we can actually contend with them are islands, and that's why we're talking with Heath Packard, the storyteller for Island Conservation based in Santa Cruz, California. What's the website, by the way?
The website is islandconservation.org.
There you go. So invasive species. Andrea was talking earlier about how it seems like a job for Sisyphus. You know, you fight one and another pops up here, and it's a continual fight. The weapons we use, you talked about rodenticides. I suppose when it comes to, you know, plant problems, you use herbicides. I know in our community here, they're talking about going up in our watershed and using glyphosate to get rid of Scots bloom. And I'm thinking, well, I'm not sure about that, but, you know, there's lots of different tools that we use to fight invasive species. None of them are all that good, in my estimation, but they're probably very necessary if you want to gain control. One of the things we're looking at in the future, though, is the genetic technology of the biotech industry. We've learned how to modify genes. Now we're learning how to push genes, drive genes. What does that mean, Heath?
Gene drives are naturally occurring aspects of many genomes that can bias the normal selection of a particular gene as it goes through sexual reproduction.
Mm-hmm. It's kind of how we transmit ourselves.
That's right. It's what is sometimes referred to as a selfish gene that's self-propagating and pushes itself through multiple generations.
So it mirrors itself in the next generation.
Correct.
Is that?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So we've identified this gene, and now what are we going to do with it?
Well, in our case, we're working with an international partnership of seven organizations in Australia, New Zealand, and the U.S. To see if we could create a self-limiting mouse. That would be a mouse that would drive either male sex selection or female sex selection through multiple generations, such that when it was introduced to an island, you would effectuate an eradication through attrition. Once you get to a population of all one sex, they could no longer reproduce. Mm-hmm. They would live out their days and pass on without the use of rodenticides.
Smoking cigars, hanging out, playing dominoes, okay. That kind of thing.
Yeah. Sure. And a miraculous. And I suppose this is one of the technologies that New Zealand is looking at with respect to how to get rid of the rats and the possums and the stoats. Because if you're going to invent a mouse that self-terminates, I guess you could invent just about anything that self-terminates.
Of course, I can't speak for New Zealand and what they're thinking about, but it has come up in many conversations, and many folks have been raising these two conversations together. To get to the scale and scope of eradications like New Zealand, or to meet the scale and scope of all of the islands that have been infested with rats and mice, we're going to need new tools. We've got hundreds of thousands of islands that have invasive rodents, and we've only been able to get to 1,000 in the last several decades. So we need new tools. We're looking for transformative innovations, and we're hoping that this might be one of those tools.
What other kinds of transformative innovations might there be?
That's a great question. One of the things that we're also keeping an eye on is the development of species-specific toxicants. That would be a rodenticide that would only work on one specific species and would have no deleterious
effects. That would have some kind of genetic based technology to it as well, right?
There's some that are looking at that, yes. Yep.
So they would recognize a gene and go after that gene, but no other genes.
That's right.
Seems like there's something going on like that already, is there not?
Well, there's some research going on there. There's also some that are more chemical-based and looking at specific enzymes that would only target a particular aspect of a metabolism that no other species shared with
I think,
with
you know, with respect to Bacillus thuringiensis, which is a or biological pesticide that they infuse into the gene of corn. So most of the corn grown in the United States now contains Bacillus thuringiensis. What it does is it eats the stomach out of insects, but it does not eat the stomach out of people, or so they say.
Well, yeah. I'm never quite sure about the repercussions of some of the things they say.
But okay. That would be the kind of thing that you're looking at then, right? Something that kills insects but doesn't kill people, or kills mice but doesn't kill...
That's the idea, species-specific.
So very targeted, essentially.
Yes,
sort
right.
of. It reminds me a little about nanotechnology, where you have that in cancer research, where it's going for a specific cell. So in this case, you're going for a specific characteristic of a rat that's invasive that won't affect other rodents, for example, that might be native to the island.
Correct. Highly targeted. Yep.
So that's some real deep research going on, but presenting... Great possibilities.
Presenting great possibilities, but also many, many questions. We have a very cautious and deliberate stepwise research going on with those seven partners I mentioned. Mm-hmm. The program, we refer to the program as the Genetic Biocontrol of Invasive Rodents. And
have you ever heard of Plum Island?
Plum Island. No, tell me.
Mm-hmm. Plum Island is off New York, and USDA was doing research on Lyme disease with insects, with mosquitoes on Plum Island. And from Plum Island, Lyme disease somehow got off the island and spread throughout the United States. Now, I'm not sure if that actually happened, but that's what I've read and heard. And that, you know, when we talk about these new kinds of genetic technologies, you know, in one hand, you have these great potential to do good. On the other hand, you have these great potentials to do bad. And when we get back, we'll talk about whether we should throw them out there. This is the Food Chain Radio Program. Michael Olson, 831-479-1080. Right back.
Here's a little secret I'm telling you. Take a little pledge called the 2x2. Spend $2 on local food each day and get two friends to do the same and play. Oh, they'll spend their money, and when they're through, they'll get two friends and do it too.
We can eat our way to economic security and personal freedom. It won't cost an extra dime, and it will be so easy, it will make you blush. All it takes is two numbers. One is two, the other is 2-2. Join us. Take the 2x2 pledge.
There's a little secret I shared with you, a simple pledge called the 2x2. You can do it. It don't cost much. It's so easy, it'll make you blush. Pledge two local bucks each day. Get two others to pledge and play.
Take your 2x2 pledge at metrofarm.com.
2x2. So much to say, so little time to say it, on the Food Chain with Michael Olson.
Yeah, I suspect we could talk about this for about another 3 weeks or so. But, you know, let's get right down to the question of the day, which essentially is, should invasive species be eliminated or should they be allowed to grow? Tough question. We have these great new weapons to deal with invasive species that our forefathers did not have. And we're using them to great effect in some places. But to do so, it takes a lot of effort on a lot of different fronts. You know, can we? May we? Should we? So how do you make that decision, Heath?
Well, that's the question we're asking ourselves with a genetic biocontrol of invasive rodent program. We are trying to figure out if this is technically feasible, but then we're trying to figure out if it is appropriate, if it is feasible from a social perspective, from an ethical perspective, from an ecological risk perspective. We have many, many studies and hundreds of experts involved in helping to ask those questions. So we need to answer those unanswered questions to determine not only could we do this, but should we do it and under what conditions. And we are optimistic, we're hopeful, but we need to do the research and we don't have a foregone conclusion about whether this will or could be done.
I guess that would be the most dangerous thing in the world, would be a foregone conclusion in a situation like this where you just don't know. Let's pick up a phone call. We have one, by golly. And this would be John. John, are you there?
I am here. And my little thought is, here we live in beautiful Santa Cruz County.
Some of us do, at any rate.
Yeah, and we have these ugly eucalyptus trees that...
Well, there you go.
...that overtake everything that is a native plant. Acacia trees are growing up along the sides of the roads. Scotch broom, pampas grass. If this was growing in the Monterey Bay Sanctuary, they'd be up in arms. I don't understand why we allow it here, and we don't seem to care.
Well, that's a good question. Thank you for asking it, John. So why do we care about some of them and not? And I guess it goes back to the notion that here on the mainland, we're toast.
Well,
the things are so out of control on the mainland.
I feel doomed.
We're doomed.
I feel doomed, Michael, when you say that.
Yeah, we're not toast on the mainland by any means. There's great efforts going on to control lots of invasive species, and hopefully someday the technology will get to the point where we can do even better and potentially eradicate them. But it comes down to local decision-making. Mm-hmm. Communities need to decide, based on their own values and what's important to them, where those sorts of investments are made. And so that's why we don't work in places where we aren't welcome. We work with islanders and island communities and governments that want our help. And, someday maybe Santa Cruz locals will get to the point where they agree with John.
We want to get rid of all. You know, I think about all of those good intentions, like mm-hmm. eucalyptus trees, like starlings. Like, maybe if we as a people quit having so many good intentions,
yeah,
things will get better a lot quicker. Wow, that was a lot of fun.
Interesting.
Island Conservation. What's the website?
Islandconservation.org. And if you'd like to make a contribution mm-hmm. or reach out to us, you can find ways to do that right on that website.
Excellent.
So you can pitch in some dollars into the pot and get rid of some rats.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
What a deal. Thank you so much for joining us, Heath. Thank you all for tuning in as well. This has been the 1,102nd show. File this one under Michael Olson's First Law of the Food Chain. Agriculture is the foundation upon which we build all our sandcastles. Thank you very much for tuning in.
You've been listening to the award-winning Food Chain Radio Show with Michael Olson. And if your friends missed the show, tell them to log on the Food Chain page at metrofarm.com for a listen. Now, go out and find some food with its farmer's face on it and live.